Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Chapter 27, Seghetti. Dear Lord, bless the hands that made this meal for all of us to share tonight, the minister began, after asking all the poor to bow their heads in their prayer in the small basement of the Community Christian Church at the end of Warren Avenue in downtown Bremerton. Thank you, Lord God, for bringing us together to share our joys and concerns as we break bread, he continued. I raised my head a little to peek at him. He was a slim older man, mostly bald except for a swish of graying hair that he combed over the top of his head. He had a gentle voice. You are always with us in our time of need, and you lift us from the depths of despair, he continued. God bless us all. It was, thankfully, a short prayer. That was the kind the homeless liked. We were generally a hungry crew. The 80 or so of us who had crowded into the small basement that night lined up along the wall as three ladies began serving dinner from metal trays covering the folding tables at the front of the room. It was Friday, and the offered feast was fish sticks, macaroni and cheese, and apple pie. C and I shuffled to the end of the line. We were not there by choice, but in an effort to prevent a potential legal problem for the fellow with us. Our friend Johnny's ex, Marion, had a restraining order against him which involved so many feet of separation. Johnny was hoping his former lover would not be at this church dinner on this particular night. But she was. Marion was at the front table. Still, Johnny was hungry, so C was doing his utmost to keep the requisite distance between them and avert any contact between the two. He encouraged Johnny not to look, talk, or think about Marion, so, of course, Johnny had to look, talk, and think about her. I know it was wrong to hit her, but she... Shush! Said C, trying to position himself so that Marion could not see Johnny. The line began moving forward at a steady pace as the ladies wielded their tongs and big serving spoons. More fish sticks, one server yelled out at the kitchen helper. Coming, a voice yelled back from the kitchen. By the time C, Johnny, and I reached the front of the line, the lady serving fish sticks was frowning. A man from the kitchen had just dumped a fresh load of fish sticks on her serving tray, and they were burnt. I'm sorry, she said, looking at us. They burned the fish sticks. She began picking through the pile of the least damaged pieces. They're only burnt on the bottom, she said. Maybe you can scrape them off. We all smiled and assured her they would be fine. Johnny and I then got our dinner portions, and C turned to scope out the situation in the room. Marion was sitting at a table in the middle on the right side. Her back was to C and Johnny. Okay, Johnny, C began in his best conspiratorial tone. We are going to hug the left side of the wall to the very last table back there. Do not look at Marion on the way. Stay right behind me. And sit down, eat, and leave. We don't need any drama here in the basement of this church. I fought back a chuckle as C, the peacemaker, took the lead, followed by Johnny and then me. We moved quickly to our table, carrying our burnt fish sticks, macaroni, and apple pie. I peeked over at Marion, who was peeking back. Then she smiled at me, acknowledging our effort to keep Johnny away, which I considered quite gracious under the circumstances. I breathed a huge sigh of relief, knowing all was going to be peaceful through this meal. Yes, it was peaceful, all right, if not entirely pleasant. C's strategy to keep Johnny in a safe place put a smack dab across from one of the people we usually tried our hardest to avoid. Ted, the master of the grossest burps and belches in this ragtag traveling community. Everyone knew the burp would eventually embellish any mealtime gathering. We just didn't want to be too close when it did. Tonight was no exception. We ate just as quickly as we could in an effort to be out of there before the inevitable occurred, but to no avail. I had just finished my last bite of apple pie when Ted lowered his head to his chest and the sound roared its way up from his depths, bringing all conversation in the room to a temporary halt. Then Ted pushed his chair back and left. Gradually, the chatter around us resumed. I think I've lost my appetite, C muttered. What do you say we get going, Richard? I'm ready, I replied. Need a ride, Johnny? No, I'm going to hang out downtown. It's Friday night, he answered. But you are going to stay away from you-know-who, right? Seymour ordered than asked as he stood up. Oh, yeah, was Johnny's reply. He stood up, and we all walked outside together. Then he said, Thanks, guys, and began walking down the hill on 11th Street. C and I headed for the van, relieved for several reasons that this particular meal was over. Feel like going for a ride? C asked after we got in the van. I hesitated as I turned the key and looked at my gas gauge. Don't worry about the gas, C said, reading my eyes and my mind. I've got some gas money. Then sure, I said. Head out toward the fairgrounds on the east side, he said, as I put the van in gear. It's not far, he added. C leaned forward, squinting his eyes to focus on the radio. He picked a button and pushed it. It was 101.5, one of the rock channels from Seattle. Great, he said as the song came on, and he began doing the imaginary drum routine I had come to know so well. The taste of burnt fish sticks still filled my mouth, and I tried to clean my teeth and gums with my tongue as we drove. C's eyes were closed now, his head shaking back and forth and his feet stomping to the song. Then he lifted his head and opened his eyes. Turn right at the next light, he instructed. I did as he asked. Up ahead, see that storage sign? Pull in there. I took a left into the driveway by the storage units. Oh, good, the gate's open, said C. Just go straight in, all the way to the back by the fence. I drove slowly over the speed bumps that dotted the path, past the steel-gray doors of the storage units, and stopped at the very end. We got out, and Willow, not to be left behind, jumped out after us. C walked to the end unit, number 33, put his ear to the door, and then knocked. It's me, C, he said. Anybody home? It took a few seconds, but then the door rose slowly. The bare feet, the torso, and the face of a black woman came into view, and she broke into a smile. Well, hi, C. It's good to see you, she said. Her eyes were flashing. Two young children stepped forward. They were boys who stood about waist high. Everything okay? She asked. Sure, everything is fine, C reassured her. Has anyone been hassling you? He asked. No, she said. We don't usually get back here until 7. The manager leaves at 5. Oh. This is my friend Richard, and this is his dog Willow. Willow had already scootered inside, and the boys were petting her. The woman stepped forward and wrapped me in a big hug. Glad to meet you, Richard. I'm Dorothea. Then she turned to the boys. Boys, say hello to Mr. Richard. To me, she said, this is Elijah, and this is Dustin, my two boys. Dorothea was a large woman, with big arms sticking out from the sleeves of her print dress. Her hair was pulled back in a bun, held there by bobby pins. Three sleeping bags were rolled out on a large piece of soiled foam rubber by one wall, and clothes were folded neatly on top of cardboard boxes. A tarp covered something along the back wall. An extension cord hung from a fixture in the ceiling that allowed for a plug and a light bulb. The cord looped down to two hot plates sitting on a small wooden table along the wall. One plate held a pan and the other a pot. Something was cooking. I walked over and sniffed. It smelled delicious. Elijah noticed my interest. We're having spaghetti, he said, smiling. That's spaghetti, his mother corrected. Spaghetti. She said it one syllable at a time. Now you say it, she instructed her son. Spaghetti, he said. Dorothea laughed. Oh, you'll get it someday. We're just getting ready for dinner, she said, reaching for a spoon to stir the sauce. I have plenty. Her voice trailed off invitingly. Sure, I'll have a bite, C replied politely. Richard? Dorothea asked. It smells great, I replied, but only if you really have plenty. We already had dinner. We have plenty. The boys eat like birds, and I made a lot. She went to work finishing dinner preparations. She poured water from a plastic jug into the pot and turned on the burner. Then she took a loaf of French bread out of its foil sleeve and began slicing it. She hummed as she went about her tasks. Dustin and Elijah stood close to their mother. Dustin was restless, rocking back and forth with his hands clasped behind his back. Both were skinny as rails. Elijah wore blue jeans with a red T-shirt, and Dustin had on blue jeans with a yellow T-shirt. Dustin inched closer to Dorothea and put his arms around her leg. "You boys have to give me some room now while I'm a-cookin'," she said, shooing them away. C knew the boys needed something to do. "Dorothea and the boys have been gracious enough to stay here and guard my drums," he said, looking at me and then at the boys. "Your drums?" I asked. "What drums?" "Play your drums," Elijah said. "Yeah, play the drums," Dustin joined in. C stepped to the back of the storage unit and pulled an old tarp off a full set of drums and cymbals. There was a bass drum, a pedal, two snare drums, and a drummer stool. He tossed the tarp in the corner as Elijah and Dustin rushed over. "You don't know how hard it is to keep those boys away from that drum set," Dorothea said. C picked up the drumsticks lying on top of the snare drum and then sat down on the stool.
"I picked these up on my way here from Portland. A drummer I met at the Salvation Army sold them to me. He was down on his luck and needed money for a bus ticket back to Michigan. I had them in the Armadillo for a while, but they were taking up all my living space. I got this storage space and thankfully bumped into Dorothea and the boys, and here we all are."
"Thank the Lord I met C,"
Dorothea said, snapping a handful of spaghetti in half and dropping it in the pot of now boiling water.
"Play something, C,"
begged Elijah, who was standing beside C with his hands clasped behind his back.
"Okay,"
C replied, hitting the big cymbal with his stick, making it clash.
"Oh, what can I play that you boys know?"
C rubbed his beard.
"How about their Grateful Dead's Casey Jones? Trouble ahead, trouble behind."
The boys looked puzzled. "How about a rap song, C?"
Dustin asked. C took a deep breath, rubbing his chin again.
"Okay, then."
He pushed up the sleeves of his shirt and reached out his sticks to strike the drum.
Da-dump, da-dump.
The sound echoed off the ceiling.
"Dustin is my man. He's got the plan to give the world all he can. Da-dump. Clash! His brother Elijah is always here, and he's willing to share. Clash! Da-dump. Da-dump. They learn to read and write and never fight, and they hug their mother really tight. Da-dump. Da-dump. Burma shave."
Dorothea burst out laughing as C hit the cymbals and pounded the bass drum with his foot pedal.
Elijah had a question written all over his face. "What's Burma shave?" he asked.
C smiled.
"I thought you might ask that," he replied. "Years ago, rappers used to put up signs along the side of the road. Usually 5 or 6 signs made up a simple poem, and the last sign always said Burma shave to punctuate the message and sell the shaving cream called Burma shave."
"Oh,"
replied Elijah, still mystified.
"Play some more."
"Okay," C said, now thoroughly into his musical debut. "Here's one you might know."
He raised his right foot and lowered it to begin the next song.
"It's called the Hokey Pokey."
Dorothea paused in her stirring of the spaghetti sauce, dipped her finger in for a temperature test, and quickly put down the spoon.
"Wait a minute, C,"
she said.
"Come here, boys. You too, Richard."
We all walked toward her.
"Now join hands,"
she said, and we all did. Then C began his song, striking the snare drum lightly.
"You put your right foot in,"
he began, and Dorothea put her right foot forward and nodded for the boys to do the same.
"You put your right foot out," she continued to model the movements. "You put your right foot in, and you shake it all about. Da-dump, da-dump."
The boys and I followed Dorothea's lead as we did the dance.
"You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around,"
Dorothea began to sing with C.
"That's what it's all about."
We did the left foot, the right hand, the left hand, and the whole self to the rhythm of C's drumming.
"Oh, my goodness,"
Dorothea exclaimed, placing her left hand on her chest.
"All that dancing just wore me out."
Elijah blurted, "Let's do it all again."
"No, it's time for dinner, boys. Fill the pan and wash your hands."
"Okay, Mama,"
replied Dustin. He took a small metal pan from along the wall and filled it with water from the plastic milk jug. He washed his hands, and Elijah did the same. Well, their mother got 5 paper plates from a box below the little table on which she was cooking. The boys stood beside her as she handed them each a plate. Then she dipped a big spoon into the pot and pulled out the pasta for Elijah's plate and repeated the process for Dustin.
"Hold them out straight, boys,"
she said as she ladled a spoon of sauce into each of the piles of pasta. Then she stuck a white plastic fork into each pile and said,
"Take those plates to our guests, boys, and then come back for yours."
The boys walked quickly over to serve our dinner.
"Don't drop them,"
she warned.
"Oh, I forgot the bread,"
Dorothea added, pulling 2 pieces of French bread off the loaf. Elijah and Dustin delivered our bread and hurried back for their own plates. C used the swiveling stool from his drum set as a seat, and I sat down on the edge of one of the sleeping bags. I twisted my fork in the spaghetti and carefully guided it to my mouth.
"Excellent,"
I said.
"Thank you,"
Dorothea responded.
"It's Paul Newman's sauce."
4-star, definitely,
C said. "Fine casual dining in an out-of-the-way location," I added.
"An intimate location,"
C corrected me.
"Yes, yes, that's better," I said.
"Where the specialty of the house is spaghetti,"
C said. Dorothea chuckled as she listened to the banter, serving up dinner for her sons. C lifted an abundant forkful of food to his mouth and dropped 1/2 of it in his lap. He scraped it up and aimed it for his mouth again.
"How's the job going at the motel?"
he asked Dorothea as he wiped some of the sauce off his pants and licked his fingers clean.
"Oh, it's okay,"
she said.
"I get the boys up and we get dressed and they catch the bus for school in front of the Catholic Church and then I get the bus across town to the Howard Johnson. That bus stops a lot, so it takes about 1 hour. Checkout time is 11 at the motel, so I'm busy cleaning the rooms and changing the sheets from then till 4. It's mostly Navy boys who stay there, and wow, those guys are messy."
She shook her head.
"Okay, boys, here's some bread,"
she said, putting a piece of bread on each of their plates.
"Now go sit down and eat all your dinner."
The boys found seats on their sleeping bags, and Willow sat down between them.
She began making eye contact for a possible handout. "There are 3 Filipina women and me,"
Dorothea said, continuing about the motel.
"They've got us on a timer to get the rooms cleaned as fast as possible. I got 25 hours last week, which was good, but they don't get much business. They got 200 rooms, but they're lucky to fill 50 most nights. The rumor is it's going to close. That's what the girls say. If I have a good week, I bring home 110 or 20 with tips, and that goes fast for food, my medicine, and bus fares. But we got it better than some people. There was a family staying at the motel last week, a man and a woman and 2 kids. Some church put them up for 3 nights. They were always there. They didn't have any money to go anyplace. They had some canned stuff from the food bank, ravioli and stuff. The father was handicapped, kind of slow, if you know what I mean."
Dorothea took a bite of spaghetti and looked at her boys.
"Elijah, you've got spaghetti sauce all over your face."
She reached for a roll of paper towels and handed a couple of sheets to him.
"Wipe your mouth. Here's some for you too, Dustin,"
she added. C didn't escape her attention either.
"C, don't wipe your mouth on your shirt,"
Dorothea laughed as she tossed the roll of paper towels to him. C peeled off a piece and then handed the roll to me.
"I felt so bad for them,"
Dorothea said. On the day they had to leave, she said she could tell by the look in their eyes that they had no place to go. The church had run out of money for the room.
"The girls took up a collection and we gave them our tips. $20 is all we had, she said.
Dorothea, who had been standing as she ate and talked, finally sat down next to the boy on the sleeping bag.
Oh, it feels good to get off my feet, she said.
Willow moved over beside the lady and looked at her plate.
What's the dog's name?
She asked. Willow, I said. I call her the Wonder Dog.
We had a little dog back in Mississippi where I grew up, Dorothea said. His name was Shorty, and he was the meanest little son of a gun.
The miles and the years showed in her eyes when she laughed. Then she pulled out a piece of spaghetti and offered it to Willow.
Here you are, Wonder Dog, she said.
Willow gobbled up the treat.
We need a dog, Mommy,
Elijah interjected.
Oh, heavens, said Dorothea. We can barely feed ourselves right now.
She looked at C and added,
Someday, maybe. Someday when we get a home again. A home with the fence jarred so the dog can be outside in the grass and be safe.
How's it coming on that housing list? C asked.
You mean with the housing authority?
Dorothea laughed and raised her eyes to the ceiling.
We were number 5,700 2 months ago, and we're number 5,700 now. They told me it was going to be a year or two before we got to the top of the list.
A year or two?
C sounded incredulous.
I went into the office just last week after work, and they said they couldn't tell me any more where I was on the list, Dorothea said. They told me they have a new policy in place. They said I could look up my position online at home any time. Heck, I don't have no computer to go online. I don't have no phone. I don't even have no home.
It was the first hint of despair I had heard in her voice, and I sensed that she worked very hard to keep her attitude up for the boys. I saw Elijah looking at me, seeming to question my place in his world. How old are you now, Elijah? I asked, responding to his gaze.
9, he answered. 9 years old.
How do you like school?
Good.
And what's your favorite subject? Elijah lifted his head and lowered it quickly to punctuate his answer.
Geography!
Why geography? I asked.
I want to be like Harry Potter, he said,
nodding his chin again to accentuate the word.
I want to ride a big train and go to a big castle. I would become a great wizard.
So your mother has been reading Harry Potter to you, C commented.
C gave us that book, Dorothea told me. I want to go to England, Russia, Africa, and, China, Elijah said. You have big dreams, his mother said. C looked at me.
Richard, have you ever been to any of those places?
I have, I said. I've been to England, Africa, and China, but not Russia.
Wow,
said Elijah. His eyes were wide with wonder. How about you, Dustin? I asked. What's your favorite subject?
The younger boy clenched his lips together and hunched at the shoulders before looking at his mother.
Dustin is a little shy, she explained. He's not quite 8 yet. What do you like about school? She prodded.
Lunch, he said, eliciting a laugh from all of us.
What's so good? C asked.
Toasted cheese sandwiches and pickles.
He broke into a wide smile, followed by a giggle. The conversation lulled as we got serious about eating. In the quiet, I mused. How and why, I wondered, did this mother with 2 children end up living in a storage unit? With half the hotel and motel rooms in town empty every night, and 20 or 30 empty buildings within 5 or 10 minutes of here, why was there no room for them? C and I were, well, we were street people. C seemed to like his life, and I, well, I'd had a lot, and I'd lost a lot. But I had ridden the big trains from Rome to Venice. I had stayed in the turret room of the Castel de Mercure outside Avignon in France. I had known dreams and fantasies to come true. But I had no dreams now. There was no magical feeling. And if there were a wizard, I would wish him to appear, wave his wand over me, and ease me into a peaceful sleep forever, never to return. But Dustin,
Dustin still had dreams, dreams fostered by his mother's reading by the beam of a flashlight in a cold, dark storage unit. He wanted to travel to Hogwarts and stand beside Harry Potter and learn the excitement of using human powers for the common good, for love and community. Maybe together, Dustin and Harry could wave their magic wand so children would never again have to live in storage units like this. Dorothea took another strand of spaghetti and held it out for Willow.
"I've got some dessert tonight,"
she said, pushing herself up from the floor.
"Do you want the rest of this, pretty girl?"
she asked, looking at Willow and holding out her plate.
"Oh, is this okay?"
she asked me. "Sure," I said. So she put the paper plate on the floor, and Willow began licking up the meat sauce. Dorothea walked over to a paper bag near the door and reached down to pull out a package.
"Butterscotch pudding!"
she exclaimed, holding up small containers of the pudding. She returned, handing one to each of us.
"You're going to have to use your forks,"
she said.
"I'm all out of plastic spoons."
I looked at the smile on her face and the love in her eyes.
I marveled at her ability to make a home for herself and her family here in Unit Number 33, and I wondered how much longer she was going to be able to hold it together living here, where most people stash the stuff they don't need or want or cherish any longer.
"Dustin?"
Dorothea's voice got my attention.
"Do you have to go?"
We all looked at the boy, who was now holding both hands in front of his pants and squeezing his legs together. He nodded.
"Can you hold it just a little while longer?"
she asked. He nodded again.
"We'd better get down to the 76th station on the corner,"
Dorothea said.
"I can get you down there in the van,"
I said.
"Great!"
Dorothea smiled in appreciation.
"Grab your toothbrushes, boys,"
she said to them.
"We might as well get ready for bed."
The boys scurried to get their toothbrushes out of their school backpacks and put them in their jeans pockets.
"You can put your plates in this paper bag,"
Dorothea said, picking up a bag and handing it to C. We quickly tossed our plates and forks.
"We will take them along and toss the trash in the dumpster at the 76. They've been pretty good to us down there, letting us get cleaned up and use the bathroom."
Dorothea quickly unplugged the hot plates and grabbed the two washcloths and stuffed them in a large purse that she tossed over her shoulder. It was with a sense of urgency that we all piled into the van and drove as quickly as possible to the 76th station.
"We've got to get cleaned up and then get back to read Harry Potter, say our prayers, and get to sleep so we're ready for school and work in the morning,"
Dorothea said as she pulled into the filling station. I came to a stop and turned off the engine.
"Thank you for coming by,"
she said. She and the boy stepped out of the van.
"Dustin, you'd better get to the bathroom."
He dashed into the building, with Elijah right behind her.
"Thanks for dinner," C said.
"That was the best spaghetti I ever had,"
I added, laughing. Dorothea broke into a big smile, then turned and rushed off to catch up with the boys. I put my hand on the ignition key, but then stopped. I sat there a moment thinking. I had changed my wish for the wizard's wand. It wasn't about me anymore. Now I wanted the magic wand to take Dorothea and her boys to a home of their own. A home with a stove, a refrigerator, a TV, beds, lights, and toys.
"There's nothing you can do unless you've got a few thousand in your wallet," C said, adding gently, "Maybe someday you can."
I turned to look at him, and I saw the deepest sadness in his eyes. There was nothing I could say. C motioned to me to turn the key, and I smiled.
"Engage, Scotty," he said.
"Aye, aye, Captain."
That's tonight's episode. At this point, we must break off our reading. You've been hearing Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Copyright 2009. It is read with the permission of Skyhorse Publishing of New York. Join us next time on the bookshelf for Breakfast at Sally's. The bookshelf is produced by Vern Windham. I'm Jeff Hazen.